Good day, and welcome to the quarterly EN Payments call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Kimberly Cutler, EN Manager. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sarah. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining today's all EN Payments call. As Sarah stated, I am Kimberly Cutler, the EN Payments Manager, and I am the host of today's call. And the purpose of today's presentation is to provide recent announcements and insights into the payment process on the following agenda topics. So the topics for today will focus on ePay, time frame for submitting proof of relationship items, age claims, payments for unassigned tickets, and as we do in all of our calls, we will be sure to provide you with any needed resources. And at the end of the session, we will have opportunity for any questions that you may have, so we will have the question and answer form. Okay, and moving on to our next slide. So what we want to cover is an announcement that went out to all service providers on June 6th. So due to multiple email of personally identifiable information, or as we all know it, as PII breaches and stricter policies surrounding the protection of PII, effective July 1st, Social Security and TPM will no longer accept PII via email, even if it is password protected. Just want to note that again, that we will not accept any PII via email, even if you password protected, because we know in the past that's how we've normally sent PII, but effective July 1st, we can no longer accept any emails with PII. And submitting PII to Social Security or TPM via email is a PII violation. And please note that SSA will take punitive action toward any EN violating this protocol, including removal from ePay and ultimately potential termination. So please make sure you guys are all aware of the new restriction on emailing PII. And ENs are strongly encouraged to use the work case number to send inquiries via email to the payments help desk. So hope you guys are all familiar with that, with the work case number, but please make sure that's how, if you have any inquiries for payments, that you make sure that you're using your work case number. Okay? And ENs should click on either the pending payments for me link or the payments already made to me link on the main menu of the ticket portal to locate the appropriate work case number. So again, if you're not familiar with how to find the work case number, please, you can follow the links here, the pending payments for me link or the payments already made to me link, to make sure that you have all of that information to get the work case number. Because that's, when you send the work case number, that is not considered PII, so you can use that when you're sending in inquiries for payment-related questions. Okay, and thing to be also on the next slide, so if for some reason you're not able to use the work case number, then you must make sure that you use the following options to submit your personally identifiable information to TPM. So here on the next slide, on this slide, we have provided you with the fax number. We have the mailing address. And, of course, if you have questions, you can also call the payments help desk. And we have the number provided here for you along with the hours of operation. And if you do have to fax or mail in your PII information, TPM will make sure that we're forwarding that information to the correct department. And just a couple of best practices for faxing or mailing in your PII to TPM, make sure that you always use a cover sheet. Include your EN name and DUNS number on the cover sheet, and include the subject and department on your fax or mail. For example, if you're sending something to the EN Payments Department, you want that to be in your subject line, and also just a note of what it is. So an example, you would just say EN Payments Department, earnings documentation. So just, which again, we just want to make sure that we're routing the information to the health department. So anything that you could do to help with that would be appreciated. So, again, making sure you include that information when you're faxing or mailing in your PII. And another thing, if you're faxing, it is just a good practice to always print the confirmation sheet of successful fax. And that will help just in case there are any issues with faxing. It allows a better research. It will help you, you know, to have proof that the fax actually went through. But just a good practice to always print off that confirmation sheet when you're actually with your faxing in your information. Okay, and moving on to our next agenda topic is ePay. I know that's everyone's favorite, so we just want to make sure that we keep the reminders on the presentation. So TPM will start processing the next ePay file soon. So please remember that you are encouraged not to submit outcomes via the ticket portal because those payments will be picked up during ePay. And TPM will pay all available payments. So as we know, we're not able to pay phase one milestone one via ePay, so you still have to submit those through the portal. But for your outcomes, for your phase twos, for your outcomes, as long as all payment criteria are met, TPM will go ahead and make those payments. So we do encourage you just to give us a chance to process those cases via ePay, and you don't necessarily have to submit them through the ticket portal. And also remember that the file is processed in order of SSN, not done. So it is very possible that once we start processing the ePay file, you may receive a few payments right out the gate as soon as we start. But then you may not receive any more payments until a little bit later because we're paying based on SSN, not in the order of done. So please just make sure you just remember that. So in case you're like, oh, I got a lot of payments, you know, ePay file started, you know, last week. I got a lot of payments, and then I haven't received payments in a couple of weeks. Again, it could be due to the fact that we just haven't come across your SSN again. So they are processed by SSN and not done. So those are just a couple of reminders when we start processing ePay. And as usual, we will put an announcement in the portal letting you all know once we started processing the next ePay file. Okay, and moving right along, our next topic focuses on time frame for submitting proof of relationship items. And we've added this topic a few times in the past, but we really wanted to make sure that ENs are really have the understanding of when you need to submit your proof of relationship items, right? So we all know that, or should know that, when you're submitting for phase one, when you're submitting a payment request for phase one milestones 1 through 3, you must provide proof of relationship. And proof of relationship can be established through pay stub or a completed proof of relationship form, or the POR form as we know it. And when submitting payment requests, this is the key thing. If you're submitting a payment request based on earnings already proven, so you've received that note in the system when you're submitting your payment request, proof of relationship items must be submitted at time of submission. And of course that's the policy that is, you know, when you go into the portal and when you're requesting your payment for phase one milestone one. And it's based on earnings already proven at the time of submission. So whenever you're submitting your request, you should also provide your proof of relationship items. Even if you have the message earnings already proven, you still may have pay stubs. So we encourage you to submit your pay stubs, right? And if you do not have pay stubs, then, of course, you need your completed proof of relationship form. And the key thing to remember with that is when the case is assessed for, when your request is assessed for phase one milestones 1 through 3, if we do not have the POR items at the time that we process or assess the case will be denied. And TPM no longer outreaches for POR-related items, so we will not outreach and ask for you to provide that information. If it's not there when we process the case will be denied. And there are times when cases are processed on the same day as the receive date. So again, that is why it's so important that when you submit your request, at the same time, make sure you're providing your proof of relationship items to make sure that your case will not be denied because we did not receive it. So just please make sure that you guys are aware and note that you must submit your proof of relationship item at the time you are requesting your phase one milestones 1 through 3 if you're basing it on earnings already proven in SSA system. Okay. And the next topic, we're going to focus on aged claims. So if an EN shall request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings meet the payment criteria. So again, if you're working with your beneficiary, and I know that sometimes they take a while for you to either get access to their earnings or trying for the system, SSA system to update, please make sure you are aware of the time frame because SSA will not accept payment requests for periods outside this 24-month window. And here we have an example of that. So on July 5th, 2020, Ian submits for phase two milestone at claim month January 2018, right? So they're just requesting this in July, but the requested claim month is January 2018. The claim month is outside the 24-month window and will be denied using the denial reason request received more than 24 months after claim month. So in case some of you guys are seeing that denial reason, this is why. So again, just be very mindful, making sure that as soon as the beneficiary has the work and earnings that meets the payment criteria, that you're submitting that request. Because if not, your payment request will be denied if it falls outside of the 24-month window. So that's why we want to just make sure we add that information to today's presentation. Okay, and now we're moving on to the next slide, and here we're going to focus on payments for unassigned tickets. Under certain circumstances, SSA may continue to pay an EN when a ticket holder achieves designated work-related milestones and outcomes after the ticket holder unassigns the ticket or following expiration or termination of the ENTPA. So we wanted to just kind of cover some points about how and when you would be able to get paid if the ticket was unassigned. First, we talk about if the ticket is unassigned by the EN. So an EN may unassign a ticket at any time. However, this means that the EN is no longer providing services or ongoing employment support to the ticket holder. So just want to kind of reiterate that. So if you as the EN, if you unassign the ticket and you have a right to do so, you can unassign the ticket at any time. But by unassigning the ticket, you're saying that you're no longer providing services or ongoing employment support to that ticket holder. And ongoing support or the availability of ongoing support is a requirement for continued payment. And SSA will cease ticket payments to the EN effective the month prior to the unassignment month. So if the EN unassigns the ticket in January of 2020, the last payable month that the EN can receive payment for would be December of 2019. So just want to make sure you are aware that once you as an EN unassign the ticket, you are no longer eligible for payment. And that includes any split payments for work or earnings achieved by the ticket holder beginning with the ticket unassigned this month. So even if the beneficiary, you know, continues to work and continues to achieve earnings, your EN will not be eligible for any of those payments or any split payments in the future. So if you unassign the ticket, just be aware that that stops your payments or you're not eligible for any payments after the ticket unassignment month. Now, the next slide, if a ticket holder unassigns a ticket, and the same with an EN, the ticket holder may unassign a ticket at any time. But if the ticket holder unassigns a ticket the EN of record at that time may benefit from its contributions to the ticket holder's work achievement. So, in other words, the beneficiary unassigns the ticket, but you, as the EN, you contributed to that beneficiary work achievement, right? So SSA may continue to pay the EN the full payment due for any claim month for which the ticket holder's earnings qualify the EN. Now, the key takeaway from here is that SSA may continue to pay the EN, but for a period not to exceed 12 claim months in an 18-month period, beginning with the unassignment month. So you want to make sure that you are aware of the unassignment month, because you will have, or EN will have, 18 months from that time to request the 12 possible payments. So SSA is only going to pay up to 12 payments, right? But you have 18 months to request those 12 payments. And, of course, your payment will be based on an evaluation of the services that you provided to the beneficiary. And you want to make sure that you, when you're submitting for payment, that you provide the certification of services. And that is a form not to be confused with the proof of relationship form, the POR form. It is a separate form. And whenever you're requesting a payment for a ticket that has been unassigned by a beneficiary, you must submit a certification of services form detailing the services provided to the ticket holder for the entire ticket assignment. So if you're only asking for, let's say, January 2020, you still have to provide a list of the services you provided from the time the ticket was assigned to your agency. We're not just looking for the services for that particular month. It is for the duration of the time period when the ticket was assigned to you. So that's why we want to make sure you guys are aware of that. And moving on to slide 10, what is the continuation of when the ticket holder unassigns the ticket. So the previous slide did cover that, you know, if the beneficiary unassigns the ticket, that an EN could receive up to 12 payments, right, within an 18-month period. But there may come a time when the ticket holder reassigns the ticket to another EN during that 12 claim month period and within 18 months after the unassignment. So we just wanted to note here that if that happens, the former EN may request a split payment for the remaining months of the 12 claim month period. So, in other words, you as the current or you as the prior EN, the ticket was unassigned by the beneficiary, right? So you're entitled to, you could possibly receive 12 additional payments. But within that 12-month period, the beneficiary or the ticket holder unassigned their ticket. So now it's with another EN. So it could still be a split payment for you to receive those possible 12 payments. You wouldn't be able to go past that. So once it's assigned to another EN, you would submit for your payment. The prior EN would submit for payment, and it becomes a split payment. But the split would only involve, for the prior EN, the split payment would only go through the 12 claim months. After that, the prior EN would not have you will not be eligible for any future payments. And again, you still have to submit your certification of services. And just a note that now, when it becomes a split payment, it is going to, the payment determination will be based on the services provided by both EMs. So this is why it's so important that while the ticket is assigned to your agency, you guys are documenting all of the services that you're providing, because for different reasons, for your service and support reviews, but also when it comes to your payments, whenever SSA is going through the process of determining what payments you are available for and also what is the split of payments if it involves more than one EN. So key thing is making sure that you document your services, but also remembering that when the ticket holder unassigns the ticket, you are eligible possibly for those 12 payments, but if the ticket is reassigned, then it becomes an issue of a split payment, right? And, of course, if you have questions about that, you can definitely reach out to the payments help desk, and we can provide a little bit more clarification on it. But just wanted you to be aware of what happens and how you would be able to receive payment for a ticket unassigned by a beneficiary. The next slide, we talked about the fact that when you are requesting a payment for a ticket that was unassigned by the beneficiary, that you have to submit certification of services. This slide actually just lets you know where you can locate the form, all right? So it's in certification of services, or the cost statement form is what we know and what we call it. And it just gives you the steps of where you can go to download the form. Just making sure that you have that information ready and available when you're submitting for your request. And also making sure that you must provide your evidence of earnings as well. So that just gives you the link to find the form that is required when you're requesting payment for a ticket that has been unassigned by the ticket holder. And we're now moving to the resource page of the presentation. And as always, we want to make sure that you guys have access to contact TPM, contact SSA for any assistance, for any questions that you have. So here you have, if you have any payment-related issues, please make sure that you contact our help desk Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have our members listed here, the options that you would select depending on the need or the assistance that you need. You have your email address for payment-related issues. And, of course, if you have questions and issues related to ticket assignment, then we have the address where you can contact the help desk as well. So if you have questions for ticket assignment or service provider website or questions related to the ticket portal, please make sure you're reaching out to the EN Systems Help at your ticket to work. SSA.gov. And again, our help desk hours are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, so that actually covers all of our topics for today. So what I would like to do, Sarah, if we could first start off, and I would like to ask if we can just do kind of a rotation. So we'll start out to ask if we have any questions right now in the phone queue. So if you could just open the lines up for questions there, I'd appreciate it.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. All right, we'll go ahead and take our first question now from Stacy. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Stacy Clark. Hi. This is a real specific payment question, and when did you get your advice? I have a beneficiary who, in the past, has successfully finished his trial work level, and he got off his cash benefits, and he was working a little bit over a year, and then he ended up quitting, so we contacted Social Security field office. They reinstated his benefits, and he was getting his payments every month. So what happened recently back in April, right during the COVID, we found him another job, and he is working well over SGA. And we contacted the local field office again. You know, we can't go in and visit, but I do have a contact. Unfortunately, they're not able to stop his benefits because of the COVID. They're not able to go in there and make that because he's really not supposed to be receiving his cash benefits right now because he's well over SGA. I have his statements I can send in. So my question to you is I have his statements. I went in and tried to do a payment for an outcome because he's actually supposed to be in an outcome phase. But because the system, the ticket work system, shows he is still getting a check I can't do that. It's not allowing me to do that for an outcome, which I understand why, but I don't know if I could put in for a phase two. I'm not sure how to submit payment for him for April, May, June.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that I have it right, because you were a little muffled, but I don't think it was your fault.
Okay. Sorry.
Phone line.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. You're fine. And so basically what I'm understanding is, like you said, he should not, that your beneficiary should not should receive benefits, but because the field office, because of COVID-19 and everything, they're not able to, they're not doing the cessation of putting them in suspense.
That's
what
right.
I'm going to do is just ask, like, I'm just going to ask one of our SSA representatives to just kind of jump in
and
give you, give you an update on where we are and what we're going to do about those cases. So,
okay, great.
No problem.
Good afternoon. This is Patrice McLean. We were made aware of this last week, and we sort of knew that it might happen. I can't say that we have a true response for you yet. I would talk to Kim to let you know whether or not you could request a phase two. Right now, we don't have a solution or a workaround that will assist in you being able to get an outcome payment when, per SSA records, the person is still in pay. We are working with
right.
the policy and our operations areas to determine if there's anything that we can do. We're not sure what's possible because, systems are designed specific ways. It's designed to show a specific code if someone is in pay and a specific code if someone is out of pay, specifically due to work. And so we haven't worked out anything yet, but we are in touch with our operations and our policy. We are the area within our office that is the policy component to see if there's anything that we can do. And if that happens, of course, we'll make that change.
Okay, so basically just hold tight, because I do have a statement
yes.
April, May, June. When he's over, I know I tried to put it in and it was denied because it's showing he's in current pay, but he's not. He shouldn't be, but I just, like you said, they can't suspend it. They can't do anything about it. So, all right, well, I will just wait. I just didn't know, if there was any resolution on that, because I had called a couple months ago about it, but thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Patrice, for
so go ahead.
That.
Sure, no problem, Kim. We'll go ahead and take our next question now from Janelle. Please go ahead.
Hi there, thank you. So I have a question. I just assigned a new ticket holder and she's working. The employer has a business checking that they just cut her a check. It's not an actual pay stub. And I want to know if that's acceptable to submit a copy of that check or if there's some other sort of forms that I should be filling out.
Okay, I'm sorry because I'm having a hard time here, so forgive me for repeating. But you said you had someone that just started working and the employer cut them a check, but you don't have pay stubs?
Correct. It's just like almost like if you or I were to write a personal check to somebody out of our checking account, but it is a business account. It says the company's name on the check, but it's not a pay stub.
Right. So what I would encourage you to do, because when we have evidence of earnings, we have to be able to see the tax withholdings and things like that. So I would, is there any way that you could ask employees to an employer prepared earnings statement?
I can do that.
But I think that would probably
that.
Help. Right.
We
that
have a walk.
I'm sorry.
Hello, this is Deborah. I just wanted to tell the Ian that there is a form on the website called an employer prepared earnings statement. If you download a copy of that and send it into the employer to fill it out and sign, and then the employer can annotate any taxes that were held, withheld, FICA, Medicaid, any of that, and then sign off on that, then that we can use that along with the check.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
We'll go ahead and keep
okay. If there are, what we'll do is we'll take one more. Yeah, we'll take one more call through the phone line, and then we'll go through the chat. But okay, I think you said we had a call. Was this Sandra? You said.
Yes.
Yes, it's from Sandra. Please go ahead.
Yes, my name is Sandra Abbott, and I had a question in regards to the payroll stubs. Most of my beneficiaries are turning in their stubs. There's just a couple that are very reluctant, to submit their payroll stubs on a monthly basis. And I had sent to them also a copy of our agreement showing that on a monthly basis that the payroll stubs are to be submitted to an to their EN on a monthly basis. I don't know, can I still bill for the months their P1, PT to P4? Can I still bill for those payment periods without the stubs?
Well, when you're submitting for a payment request, we must have evidence of earnings because we only accept evidentiary payments at this time. So if you're unable to get the pay stubs, then another resource you might want to work is the work number. You actually can go through them. It's a third party. It's a source, so it's not through us, but you can visit their website. You know, just go to the work number. They provide evidence of earnings. If you're submitting a request through SSA system and you get the message earnings already proven, so if it's for a phase one milestone 1 through 3, you would just need to make sure that you submit proof of relationship items, right? Because the earnings can be already proven in the system, but we would not be able to process a claim if we do not have evidence of earnings. So you would need the pay stubs either to show earnings, you would need the work number that could show earnings, or if you receive the message earnings already proven in the system, for phase one milestone 1 through 3, you would need more proof of relationship items, and we can go from there. But we could not process it if we do not have evidence of earnings.
Okay, and I did that at one time. It stated in the portal that the documentation was in your system, so I didn't submit the payroll stubs, and they still denied it because they're saying I didn't submit them.
You didn't, okay, and it could be, and you know, because it could be without me seeing the particulars of the case, the details of the case. But if you submitted a payment request based on earnings already proven in the system, right? If it was for phase one milestone 1 through 3, then we needed the proof of relationship items for the case. If you submitted it for a different payment based on earnings already in the system, but once we received the request, if the earnings in the system did not satisfy the payment or they were not from a verified source, we would have to reach out to ask you to provide those earnings. And of course, if you cannot, then the case will be denied. So I would have to know the details of the case. But if you did submit it based on earnings already proven and we denied the case, then that somewhere along the way there was some type of criteria, payment criteria not met. So we'd have to look at that case on, individually to get the details of it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and if we could, Sarah, could we just move to the chat and see what questions we have there?
Okay, Kimberly, this is Adele. I will help you with that. We do have quite a few questions in the chat. Let's see if I can put this in some sort of logical way, if that's possible.
Thank you, Adele.
All right. When does the next e-pay begin?
We think that the e-pay will start in the next week or two, but right now, so we're expecting the e-pay files to start soon, but there will be an announcement in the portal when we do start processing the e-pay.
Okay, thank you for that. Janet asks, you said that if you request a payment for an unassigned ticket holder, you need to submit and certification of services form and evidence of earnings if the person is unassigned. It could be difficult to get evidence of earnings if earnings show in the portal is additional evidence needed.
Yes, you do have to submit the certification of services, and we do need evidence of earnings.
And this is Deborah, and that's
if I'm
only
saying that question correctly, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, this is Deborah, and that's only in a situation if the beneficiary unassigned the ticket.
Okay.
Right.
There's quite a few questions, so pardon me. What happens when a ticket holder has been removed from your EN system and doesn't show on even unassigned tickets? I have called to request why he was removed from our EN portal.
I'm sorry, Jill. I heard you say what happens if the ticket has been removed and cannot see the ticket in the portal at all?
Right. It basically is what happens if the ticket holder probably, when they say remove, that my guess is they've been unassigned and they don't show up in the unassigned tickets. And they want to know if they have to call to request why they were removed from the EM portal. That may sound like a glitch. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just want to say, Katie, are you still on the line?
Yeah, hi, I am still here. So if a beneficiary that you know that you've served doesn't show up on currently assigned to me or previously assigned to me, and you've, you know, gone through and downloaded the entire list without checking dates, and you don't see that SSN there, then you are going to have to contact a help desk so they can research to see what happened. Because it sounds like the assignment was removed altogether, because everything should be in the portal. So it sounds like an anomaly, and someone will have to look it up for you.
All right. Okay. Thank you for that.
And just a reminder that you can no longer send encrypted PII if you want to check on a specific ticket holder. So ideally, you could either do a phone call or start with an email and, have them call you back. Because, you can't send the SSN through email anymore. I just wanted to make sure I put that reminder in.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. And Adele, we'll take one more from the chat, and then we'll go back to the phone queue.
Okay. So for phase one, milestones 1-3, a clarification. Either pay stubs or work number documentation and proof of relationship are needed, or one or the other.
No, so when you're requesting phase one milestones 1-3, you have to show proof of relationship. So pay stubs will show proof of relationship. The pay stubs are a standalone. So if you have pay stubs and we have evidence of earnings, then that will be your proof. If you do not have pay stubs, you have to provide your proof of a completed proof of relationship form. So evidence of earnings must be present in any case, right? So if you have pay stubs, the pay stubs could satisfy your earnings information and your proof of relationship. If not, you can submit your earnings through the work number, employee prepared earnings statement, or if the earnings are already established in SSA database, then that satisfies your earnings. But you will still need your proof of relationship item. I just said a lot. Pay stubs serves both for relationship and earnings. If you do not have pay stubs, then you need your earnings with the proof of relationship or the completed POR form.
I just want to piggyback off of that. There is a question about what is the difference between the proof of relationship and the certification of services form?
Of course. They serve two different purposes. So the proof of relationship form is only used for requesting payment for phase one milestone 1-3. It is used to show that you have established a relationship with your clients during those months, during that time frame. Certification of services is a form that is used to provide services for the entire time the ticket was assigned. So core form, proof of relationship for phase one milestones 1 through 3, so it's a very targeted time frame. Certification of services is for unassigned tickets, and it covers the range of from beginning of the ticket assignment date. So two different purposes.
Thanks. Kimberly, I think you said you were going to go back to the phones. I have plenty here.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much, Adele. Yeah, so if we could, let's see, we got. So, yes, if we could, Sarah, do you have any questions in the phone queue right now?
I have about 7 in the queue right now. Would you want, were you ready to go ahead and take some more?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. We'll take our next question from Jeff. Please go ahead.
Okay.
Yep, thank you. Not to bitch too much, but I've been doing this since 2003. And each year it seems to be getting more and more challenging to put in for a payment, almost to the point where it is now equaling the challenge that someone with a disability has to get onto disability in the first place. And a perfect example of that is a proof of relationship. Why did that come about? Except for the distrust that is being put onto the EN to prove their relationship with the beneficiary. I mean, when you think about it, the beneficiary always has the ability to unassign the ticket if they're dissatisfied with the service that the EN's providing. So why is SSA and disability getting involved and getting to this degree of making it such a challenge and extra work for the EN to put in for these payments? And that's one of two questions I have for you.
Okay, the first question, and I'm going to hand this off to SSA because you specifically asked why is SSA making a change. But I will start out that one of the reasons why the proof of relationship was put in place was for the integrity of the program. I do not think that it was to, I don't think it was in doubt of the honesty of EN's working with beneficiary and providing services. Again, it was for the integrity of the program. These are the upfront or the intensive services that EN are required to provide to beneficiaries. So this is just a way of documenting, making sure, giving you an opportunity, you, the EN, the opportunity to show us, to list the services that you provided to your beneficiary. One, to make sure that you are in compliance with providing those services. But again, I think it was based on the integrity of the program. But I'll stop at this point and ask if someone from SSA would like or can chime in to answer his question about
why this is Natalie.
The relationship was implemented. Thank you. Hi, Natalie.
Yes. Hi. I'm echoing what you said. You explained it perfectly. And I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay.
Unless there's other questions.
The other question is I have a beneficiary who has been off the disability monthly check since 2015. And it is still required to show earning stubs here in 2019. Why?
Were you requesting outcome payments for those, sir?
Correct.
And when you went into the portal to request the payment, it was not showing that SSA had proof of earnings in the system already?
Right. She had an extension for 2019. But why would that even be a consideration when she hasn't received a check for over 4 years?
Now, that will not be a proof of relationship. If you go into the portal to request an outcome
payment. No, that's it. That's right.
And okay, my, right, but if you're going into the portal to request the outcome payment and we are not showing the earnings, then yes, you would need to submit payments just so we can see the pay stub to give you the outcome payment if we don't have the earnings in our system already. That's the only reason for that. That is not the proof of relationship.
Well, that I know it's not proof of relationship, and I understand what you're saying. What I'm questioning is why. Why
okay.
are we requiring it 4 years later when she has no longer received a check from you?
Okay,
I mean,
if you could send
this
to Deborah. If you
Deborah,
can send this. Okay. Go ahead, Deb.
Okay, the answer to your question, I understand what you're saying. They haven't gotten a check for 4 years, so the assumption would be they must be working because they would have had a check. But the reason that you have to do that, it is a requirement of the program. It's in the TPA that a requirement of the program is that earnings must be proven for the particular type of payment, whether it's milestone or outcome, and the other requirement has to do with the beneficiary status. So even though it's for 4 years, they haven't gotten a check, a requirement to receive an EM payment is to submit earnings. Or we need to know that they are working at the level to meet that that EM payment requirement. That's the reason why. I see your point, but that is just a requirement of the program.
I mean, you know, if they weren't working, they would put in a request to have their checks restated. Yeah, and again, this is all this adds up to putting more work onto the EN.
Well,
by
I do understand your concern, sir, and I think that we did try to, you know, try to answer it the best we could, but I do want to encourage you that if you do have additional questions, you know, like some of them, like Ms. Tennessee said, and like Natalie said, it is strictly the policy, right? It's what's in place, it's what we follow. And that's not to say we're just dismissing how you feel, but we just want to kind of make sure, you know, that this, right now we're trying to answer very, you know, the questions related to the payments process and things like that, not so much policy. But I will have, if you could just provide us, if you want to put in the chat or you want to call the help desk to get my contact information, we can continue to have the discussion offline. But I think the bottom line is the concerns that you have, though valid, are just policy, right? It's just the way that it's set up and we have to follow it. Doesn't mean we don't, you know, we don't want to hear you, but I would just say that if you, you know, can contact the help desk, they can forward your information to me and we can just have a call offline. Because we want to just make sure that we have the time dedicated, you know, to answer very specific payment questions so that everybody can walk away with a better understanding. But, you know, unfortunately, we can't change policy. We definitely can't change it here on the call, but we do hear you. But if you would like to have further conversation, please feel free to reach out.
I understand what you're saying, and I guess I put these questions to you knowing you can't change the policy, but as you grow in your position and get promoted, be conscious of what's being pushed to the field and
understood.
The extent that it's just going overboard. All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. I understand. Thank you.
We'll go ahead and take our next question from Linda. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, good afternoon. I thought a beneficiary asked me a question that I thought was a very, very good question. So I was wondering if you could possibly answer it. He was wanting to know is the ticket to work program going to be more lenient during this time of COVID-19 in regards to progress in the program?
Are you referencing a little bit more lenient towards timely progress reviews?
I mean, in terms of, you know, are they during the first year, you expect certain progress, and during the second year, you expect additional progress. You know, so in regards to having to unassign tickets, because they haven't made the progress that is expected of them during in regards to what you have in your policy. Is there any adjustments being made? For instance, if they didn't get a job or if they didn't get into training during their first year, is there, because of COVID-19, is there any adjustments going to be made on what is expected from our beneficiaries?
Okay, I understand. And I'll ask someone from SSA to take this one. Basically, just are there going to be any type of adjustments for beneficiaries? And I my understanding is that the time deposit should use and going towards self-sufficiency, but I'll let someone, if I could ask someone from SSA to kind of address that.
Sure. This is Natalie. It seems like the question being asked is due to benefits and not related to the Ticket to Work program. Am I understanding that correctly, ma'am?
No. They just want, it's harder for them to go out and try to find a job right now. They're more worried about their health and being exposed to COVID-19. So, they don't feel like they're making the progress they're expected, to make in the Ticket to Work program. Because you have your guidelines on the progress, which is expected of them. So, the question currently was saying, are they going to be graded on a curve because of COVID-19 and the additional challenges they have in regards to making progress in the Ticket to Work program?
This is Patrice. I think I can take your question, and thank you so much for asking. We are meeting daily to discuss what changes we're going to make to our policies and our processes in response to COVID-19. We by no means want to take a global pandemic and hold it against any EN or any individual who is looking to work or may not be able to get out because of the pandemic. So we are fully aware of the challenges that the pandemic is causing, not just to individuals who are looking to work, but you who are trying to support them. So we're meeting daily on what we can do, and once we make any of those changes, we'll be sure to make sure that you guys are made aware. So as of right now, there's nothing on pen and paper to say that when it comes to how soon we're looking for somebody to come to get to work for, a timely progress review, for example. There's nothing on pen and paper right now that says, due to the pandemic, we're going to alleviate this specific guideline. But know that we're meeting on it on a regular basis. And once we come to any conclusions, we'll be sure to make sure that you guys are the first to know.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrice. And we're at the top of the hour, but Sarah, we'll go ahead and take another call, please. Another question, sorry.
All right, we'll take our next question from Ruth. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kimberly. This is Rachel. I appreciate you taking one more. I was wondering, we have a couple of beneficiaries that we're working with. It's a very small number, maybe two or three, where the beneficiary should have been in outcomes for over 2 years, and we've been working with the local field office to get that cessation taken care of. But in the meantime, we know those payments, those outcome payments, are expiring off the table. We know when the cessation is taken care of by the local field office, it will go back more than 2 years, and that those beneficiaries are incurring overpayments. We're talking to them about it, actively trying to get it resolved. What is going to happen with those payments? Will they just expire out, or will that be something that we just have to deal with on an individual basis?
Hi, Rachel. A very good question. This is something that we have discussed internally, because at no fault to the ENs, the benefits are not being upgraded timely, and we do recognize that. We are aware of that. And so what I would encourage all ENs to do in cases like this, you said that they should have been in the outcome status, suspension status, but the field office, they have not updated the record yet.
for us, TPM with processing claims, of course, there's nothing we can do. If, you know, if all phase twos have been satisfied and the next available payment is the outcome payment, but the benefits are still showing that in current pay, then there's nothing that we can do. What we would encourage Ian to do is make sure that you submit for your request, right? Showing that, you know, they did request the payment within the 24-month window, so that if and when the benefits or the status updates, and we can see that there was a request submitted within the time frame, that we can look at those cases, those requests on a case by case basis. So no, we don't want you guys to miss out on payments due to a delay of the field office updating the records due to COVID-19 or other things. But we want to make sure that we can see that, okay, the EN did request. They you know, they knew that their next payment was outcome. They did request for that claim month within the 24-month window, so that then everything updates, and if it does go back to update that far back, then we can look at that case or those cases individually and go from there.
Okay, that's super helpful. And we don't want to bombard you with additional requests. As long as you have that denial in there, that's sufficient. And we'll know once we have it resolved at a field office level and can come back and talk to the help desk to make sure that gets processed. That's perfect.
Right.
Just my question. Thank you.
Right. That's because you're working with the field office, keep communication open with your beneficiary so they can let you know and things like that. But, yeah, so that's definitely what we would do.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. So what we're going to do, because I know that you guys have a lot of questions, and we try to make sure that we have time. We started about five to 6 minutes late, so I want to give everybody the true hour. So, Sarah, do you have another question? Thank you.
We'll go ahead and take our next question from Susan. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I apologize if you've already answered this one, but I was temporarily disconnected. I have a client who is paid by 1099 check, and is it the case that he just asked his employer to fill out that employer prepared earnings statement and submit that with the paycheck so that we can get paid? Is that correct?
Let me show. So you have a self-employed beneficiary? I heard something about a 1099.
Yes. He's acting as an independent contractor, yes.
Right. Okay, so, and I may need some help on this one, but so self-employed, that's considered where the SSA no longer accepts certification payments, right? So for your self-employed beneficiaries, what we normally do is we have to wait until they have filed their taxes, we have the earnings information in SSA's database, and
okay.
Then we're able to process the payment. We do not accept 1099s as proof of earnings, and if you weren't asking that question, I'm sorry that I answered it, but I had someone ask that before. So we do not accept that as a form of payment. So we do have to have, for self-employed beneficiaries, the earnings posted in SSA system. Ms. Tennessee, are you still there?
Who were you asking for, Kim?
I was asking you, Ms. Tennessee, because she was asking about, I was making
sure. Oh, sure, not a problem at all. That's exactly correct. We do not accept 1099s, and Kim is correct on self-employment. We cannot accept any earnings until they're posted to Social Security systems. The reason for that is the earnings that are posted to Social Security system for self-employment, basically, we can it means that the beneficiary has filed taxes with the IRS, has listed their gross earnings, their expenses, their net, all of that, which we would need to know, you know, for assessing a case. A 1099, it could be, I don't know, 1099 is basically gross earnings, and we have to make sure that we have those earnings that have been submitted to the IRS and then sent to SSA and posted to SSA systems before we can accept any earnings from self-employment. Normally, we do pick up payments for self-employment beneficiaries on our e-pay file. When we work the e-pay file, those earnings from IRS are propagated to an SSA system so that we can see
what was actually reported to IRS. So that's the main reason for we have to, for self-employment, pretty much only is where we only accept the earnings from IRS.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tennessee. So what we're going to do is we're just going to move over and take our last question from the chat. Adele, do you have a question in the chat?
Let me pull that up. I was just sorting them out to try and get those over to you. Bear with me. What happens to those beneficiaries? What happens to those beneficiaries who turn 65 while on the program? Do they automatically drop off, or do you have to unassign them?
Right. So it depends on how the tickets are. The life of the ticket is through full retirement age. So once we have it in the system that someone reaches full retirement age, then yes, the ticket will terminate. So there's nothing that an EN will have to do at that point.
Okay. One more. If a ticket holder unassigns his or her ticket, but the EN is unaware and continues to provide services, and the ticket holder submits pay stubs, which can it or cannot be paid?
Right. So once a ticket, once a beneficiary unassigns the ticket, the EN may be eligible for future payments, up to 12 payments within an 18-month window. So if the beneficiary or the EN is unaware that the ticket has been unassigned, and they submit for payment, TPM will outreach for a certification of services to determine if that EN should receive payment. But that's why it's key to always check on the portal, because you can check, tickets assigned, that the link that was provided. You can go check to see what tickets are assigned, what tickets have been unassigned, so you would know the status. Because what's important when you're submitting a payment request for a ticket that has been unassigned is, one, providing the certification of services, two, making sure you are aware of the unassignment date so you will know the window of time that you have to request possible payments.
Thank you for that.
All righty. Okay, so we're almost at 10 past the hour. I know that there may be a few more questions. I know Adele is doing a good job and making sure we're getting that. Well, we will compile those questions, and we will provide answers to those questions, and we will get that posted up on the website soon. So we don't want you guys to feel like your questions are going unanswered. If they're not in the chat, please make sure you're using our resources and contacting our help desk with your questions. And if they can answer them, they do a great job in answering the questions. If not, they can route your question to the appropriate person to get your answers. But we are going to go ahead and wrap it up for today. Like I said, we're 10 past the hour. So I just want to thank everyone for your participation on today's call. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for TPM and SSA staff for stepping up and answering those questions and responding. So thank you all for your participation. And we do look forward to you joining us again on our next call. And our next call is scheduled for October the 27th. So, again, hopefully you guys will be able to join us again. But thank you for your time, and please enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.